Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-wing perspective. It is Saturday, October 14th, 2017. Another week bullcrap. I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And our fearless leader, Donald J. Trump, has basically declared war on the most vulnerable people in our country and elsewhere. And we're going to tell you all about it.
Yes, in addition to all kinds of rapey things, because
rapey things.
We like to talk about rapey things. No, we don't. It just happens to be
in the news.
Always.
So where do you want to start?
Well, do you want to start with healthcare?
No.
No.
But okay. Let's start with it.
All right. So Congress couldn't do shit. Tried multiple times to overturn Obamacare. Didn't have a plan to replace it. Just
threw together a lousy one, literally on cocktail napkins over lunch.
Several times.
I'm not kidding.
No, That's literally what they did.
I don't remember if it was the second or the third push.
Yeah.
But one of those. Yeah. Literally like, well, let's get together over lunch and draw out the new health plan on napkins.
Yeah.
And they literally did.
Yes.
And it didn't pass.
And it didn't work. And everyone was very upset. And, that's why it didn't work.
Than the Donald.
And then, well, hold on. Like, the American people were very upset by these gross garbage plans.
Trying to do that, yeah.
And everyone, because we love you very much, made phone calls and wrote emails and letters and showed up. And a bunch of disability advocates really made, I think, a tremendous effort. And all of it failed. They were not able to do the thing that they had promised to do. So Trump decided, well, fuck them. I promised I was going to do this, and it hurt his ego. He was mad at them. He's been throwing tantrums about it. So he signed an executive order. Tell us what that order entails.
Well, essentially, the way that the healthcare exchanges work, essentially what the core of what Obamacare, I mean, there's a lot of things in Obamacare, but one of the main tenets is if you can't get insurance through an employer or you can't afford it on the open marketplace, this is government subsidized. Not like the Republicans tell you government run healthcare. It's still run by insurance companies.
Yes.
But if you make below a certain amount of money, the government gives you a tax credit or subsidizes your premiums.
Yes.
So that you can afford it.
Yes.
Which is something precisely that I needed last year.
Yes.
For 3 or 4 months. I don't remember how many months. But I needed it. I used it. It was great. I mean, it wasn't perfect, but it was pretty damn good. It was
affordable.
It was affordable coverage that I used and needed. And it was like $150 a month for my premiums.
Yeah.
Which without this credit would have been like $350 or $400 a month at least,
yeah.
Which I couldn't have afforded.
Right.
And millions of other people are using it. And basically, in order to get those tax credits, it's part of Obamacare that is... these subsidies that are paid by the federal government
to insurance companies to subsidize low-income people's private health insurance plans.
Right.
So this isn't Medicaid.
No. It's not government-run healthcare.
No, it's not Medicaid.
None of those
things.
These
are people who are in that gap that we always talk about, right? They don't quite qualify for Medicaid, but they can't afford insurance on the private market or aren't employed by someone who provides insurance.
Even in states where they expanded Medicaid, like Colorado, if you make more than... I don't know what the percentage is above the poverty level. You can't get Medicaid.
Right.
So you're kind of screwed.
But you still really can't afford the $400.
Which was the pre-ACA world for like 20, 30, 40, however many years.
Yeah, most
been.
People, those people just didn't have insurance.
I'm old enough to remember in my 20s for several years,
too.
I just didn't have insurance.
No, I just didn't have insurance. And there was no, you can be on your parents' insurance till you're 26.
No, there wasn't that either.
When I turned 18, it was over. That was it. And I worked for a local flower shop. That did not obviously provide health insurance. Also, before ACA, they had no incentive to provide health insurance.
No.
There was no subsidies for them to do so.
Nope.
There was certainly no way that I could just go on the market and buy insurance. It would have been like $1,000 a month.
Exactly.
I just wasn't insured.
So for several years, we just kind of walked around and said, well, if I get hit by a bus or break my leg, I'll declare bankruptcy or I'll be in debt the rest of my life.
Oh, so well. That happened to me. I have a chronic pain condition, but additionally, I dislocated my kneecap.
Yeah.
And I had to go to the hospital and they had to set it and I had to have a little brace and all the things and I didn't have insurance. And they hit me with like a $7,000 bill for literally like, I don't know.
Half hour.
Yeah. I mean, I was in the ER waiting for maybe like 8 hours, but I also saw a doctor for about 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And then a nurse came in and put a thing on my leg and I had an x-ray. Anyway, I could not pay that bill, obviously. I was making like $7 an hour, mm-hmm. and I was like 19. Mm-hmm. And we had, well, this happened multiple times when I was not insured. But in this particular case, I was able to do something called the Colorado Indigent Care Program, which is like a Colorado version of Medicaid that wiped away some of it. But in a different case, the same thing basically happened tonight.
And not every state has that, of course.
No, of course.
Like if this
not.
Happened to you in Texas, you'd be fucked.
Yes, yes.
You'd still be paying that.
Right,
bill.
But I did. I had a different one when I didn't know that CICP existed. And yeah, I had that bill for 10 years.
Needless to say, that is much, much more expensive to taxpayers and to the government and. You know,
and I was young and healthy. If I were in my 50s and, you know,
had a heart condition or diabetes,
or I didn't, and I wouldn't know that I had any of those things because I wouldn't have insurance and I wouldn't go to the doctor, and preventative care wasn't something that was covered under anything. And
right.
The world before ACA was awful. It was really scary.
Which is what Rand Paul wants.
Yes.
And I guess what Trump wants, although Trump magically thinks that this is going to turn into utopia. I don't know. Anyway, the point is Trump is getting rid of the subsidies, or he's trying
yes.
to. And so what that'll mean, the CBO scored it, at least 1 million people will just lose their coverage flat out.
Yeah.
Everybody else on the exchange will see their premiums rise by at least 20%, and then there will be a trickle-down effect, most likely, to people who have, like us, employer-sponsored health insurance as
yes.
well. And this will increase the deficit by, what was it, $149 billion?
I don't know the number, but yeah, a lot.
So it's a disaster.
Yeah.
And Trump is saying this is great, and this is somehow going to lead to wonderful healthcare for everybody.
I mean,
everybody's saying, okay, Trump is really screwed up this time. He's going to pay a huge political price. So are the Republicans. I don't believe that. I don't think anything matters anymore.
I mean, it has been surprising to me. It shouldn't be surprising that this healthcare fight has really gotten people to pay attention to what's going on.
Not everybody.
This, though, this isn't a thing where you can call your congressman. He just signed an executive order saying we're no longer going to fund these
things. That's not true.
So,
that's not true. Congress can fix this very easily.
Sure.
They can write a law to fund the exchanges. They can fix it. And they were working on a bipartisan ACA fix thing. Lamar Alexander and some others, they were working on it, and then it kind of stalled, and then Trump pulled this, and then some of the theories is like, oh, well, now Trump is going to force Congress to have to fix the ACA, and
no,
I was like, I don't think
that's
his plan.
No, that's not his plan. Just dismantle it however he can.
Yeah, and dismantle
it. He doesn't
anything.
Give a shit about people or health insurance. He just wants to undo things Obama did.
Yeah, exactly.
So
well, we'll get to all that, but just the practical application of what's happening now is, it's now on Congress's plate to try to fix, and I don't trust them because they can't pass CHIP, and they can't,
yeah.
you know, they
yeah.
can't really do much of anything. So I think this is 2018 is literally live or die.
Yes.
And I think we're going to die because I think we're not going to show up to vote. And I think all those people who are being directly affected by this will just tune into their local right-wing talk radio. They'll blame the brown people for their rising premiums or whatever, and they'll enough of them will believe it. And think about all the people that we talk to on an almost daily basis
yeah.
who are still, yeah, I voted for Trump. Okay, and he's destroying your world. No, that's not the problem. Like, the problem is that I get taxed too much and my taxes don't pay for roads or something. And we see it all the time. I mean, these are truly, truly ignorant, nonsensical, illogical people, and their minds aren't really changing.
No, they're not. It's astonishing to me how the narrative around Trump for people that I know that voted for him or were even like active supporters, the narrative still always comes back to Hillary, but it's different. It's almost a defense of the vote at this point, at least for my dad. It's yes, I know it's bad, but Hillary would have been worse.
Yeah, but he's not even saying yes, it's bad. He's not copping to that.
Well, he's not saying it directly, but he's sort of
by not defending anything that
right,
Trump's actually
can't.
Doing,
he's saying,
he's inferring.
I know, but Hillary would have been even worse, as though this is bad. I mean, it is sort of, there's an implication that, like,
yeah, it's sort
Hillary
of implicit.
Would have been worse. And right. you're like, worse than this? This is really bad. We can agree on that, right? he won't admit that, but that's...
No, of course not.
Now it's become, for him, more of a defense of the vote. Like, I know, but it just...
You know what? And the Bernie people and the Stein people are still out there trashing Hillary every day too.
Yeah.
They won't stop.
I know.
On this she's so-called
not,
unity tour.
She's thing. Done. Like, what can we stop? Stop. She lost.
Yeah.
It's over.
But in any event, yeah. Here's the problem. Yes, in theory, and this is where I even part ways with Greg Dworkin, who I think is very, very smart on these things. And Greg is saying, okay, this is a bridge way too far. This is going to screw him. This is going to screw Republicans. And I'm like, will it? I mean, they're doing what they telegraphed doing, and everybody voted for them anyway, or enough people voted for them anyway, that this is where we are. So with a midterm coming up, is this going to make a huge difference? Is, you know, when Trump has been hovering around the 35-40% approval mark, and his sort of semi-approval of saying Nazism isn't that bad didn't crater him. So why should this? Why should anything?
Because this is different. I'm going to go with Greg on this one.
All right.
This isn't like he has to be a racist to keep these people because, you know, that's what got him into office. But when you take away someone's health care or someone that they love's health care, we've seen that these people are like, no, hold on. Yeah. I voted for this guy, but he can't do that. That's my health care. My husband's dying. And you ask them, well, he said he was going to. And they're like, yeah, but I didn't think he was serious. So this is something that directly affects people's actual lives.
Right. In the poll show, most people blame Republicans. But here's the thing, Rachel. This guy you talked to last night, for all I know, he is on the exchange, and that's how he gets his health care.
Probably.
Do you think he's going to blame Trump and the Republicans when his premiums go up or he gets dropped?
I don't know.
No, he doesn't even know any of the details. He doesn't know how we got here.
Yeah.
The only thing he has in his head are talking points. The most basic talking points.
Well, he had some interesting points. So I had this conversation with this guy last night. He moved here from Chicago. And he was telling me about how when he lived in Chicago, he was a part of this union. And he was talking about how he worked in a dangerous job. And he'd injured himself multiple times. And he has, like, you know, fractured this and split this and all these injuries from work. And without the union supporting him and without the protections of the union, he would have not had the health insurance that he had. He would not have had the employment protections that he had, and how unions were amazing and how he was super supportive of unions. But I just got the vibe off this guy. Like, you're saying all these things that seem like Democratic talking points, but I just had this feeling that he didn't vote.
He's a Trump Republican guy.
And I asked him, I said, you know, I just, no judgment either way. I'm just curious if you would just indulge me. Do you typically vote Democrat or Republican? And he said, Republican, of course. And my heart just sank into my gut because it was like, you just spent 15 minutes lauding the value of unions and workers' rights, and you vote Republican.
And you must know that the party you vote for hates your unions and
That's
wants to destroy them at all levels.
Yeah. And he said he had some interesting reasons. And this is one of those... I don't know what we take from this. I have a couple of things, but one of the things he said was, yes, like, I love the unions and I depended on them and they saved my life multiple times, but they're also super corrupt.
Well,
so this guy's from Chicago.
Sure.
And he's like, the unions in the Democratic Party are in bed.
That's true.
And
they're
incredibly
been.
Corrupt. And Chicago's sort of pretty infamous.
Oh yeah,
for
Richard
that
Daley
shit.
And
right.
Jimmy Hoffa and the Teamsters and yeah.
So his point was like he views Democrats as the union bosses, that the Democratic Party is so intertwined with the union in Chicago and it's so corrupt that he looks at them the same way he looks at the union bosses. They're all the same person.
So he prefers
and he had
no
some
unions?
Horrifying stories about like some of the things the union bosses did to people
oh,
who
sure.
were like, dissenters
yeah.
and like all kinds
oh,
of crazy
absolutely.
Shit, right?
Yeah, and that's
so,
true.
It is true, right? And I'm not saying it's not, but like, so it was just interesting that for him, Democrats and union bosses were the same thing. And Republicans, what he said, wanted freedom,
Liberty Bald Eagle Magos.
Yeah, he's trying to open his own business, and he's very afraid that he's happy that it's Republicans, because if it were Democrats, they would, he said, for every $5,000 I make, I have to save $2,000 of it to pay the government. And that's just, I don't know where he got that number or why he thinks that's true. But I would say that after that conversation, that the biggest takeaways that I had from it were, this is not an ideological guy, right? This guy's not a values voter, which we're going to get to. He's not this like evangelical Christian guy.
No,
right?
No, not at all.
He's a blue collar white guy from Chicago.
Yes.
You know, he's the Santorum supporter.
Arnott in New York Times would genuflect, get on their knees and worship. Blow.
Yeah. And he votes Republican because really for me, it does come down to messaging.
Yes.
Because he doesn't understand that the party that he votes for believes that his union is immoral, essentially, that he should absolutely not have codified workers' rights. That,
yeah, it's not about corruption. It's about,
no,
he should not have the right to collectively bargain.
No, he absolutely should not have the right to have a union. Even if they got rid of all the corruption in the union in Chicago, the Republican Party would still want to dismantle it, because it's not about that, right?
No.
It's about, you should not have the right to collectively bargain because of the free market.
Yes.
And all of the things that he was lauding and all of the things that were so great about being in a union, they want to take all that away from you.
Yeah, he votes against his own self-interest.
No, but he doesn't know that. He doesn't know that because the Republicans have beat it into his head that they're about freedom and individual liberty and, you know, not taxing you too much and all of those things. And so we have not spoken to him. We have not said to him, no, we're the union party. Hi, we are the union party.
We want your health care and we want your bargaining rights and we want your pension.
We fought for that. We got you that. And we've been fighting for it ever since.
And we still are.
We just forgot to tell you. We just didn't mention it. Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. You vote Republican because you love unions? What? What? We have not reached this guy.
And this guy wasn't a weirdo or brain damaged
Very normal.
Average.
Very average.
Joe, blue collar, white dude.
Absolutely.
Multiply him by 40, 50 million.
Yep.
And now you see sort of the root of the problem.
And for him, it really wasn't, like I said, he wasn't an ideologue. It wasn't like he loves the Republican Party.
And he wasn't screaming about Muslims or...
No, exactly. He wasn't talking about Muslims or gay people or women or abortion or none of it.
He probably holds some questionable views, I think if we dug deep enough. But that wasn't outwardly his beef, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
No, and it's not why he votes, right?
Something freedom taxes MAGA.
Freedom taxes MAGA, and the Democrats are
sort of a watered down, a little more ignorant version of my dad.
Right.
Like my dad would.
Your dad's really smart.
My dad would try to make a nuanced argument that might not make sense, but it's the same core. When you get down to it, my dad says the same thing. Why he votes Republican?
Yeah.
Something freedom taxes big government.
Right.
Bad,
right.
Whatever.
My dad is definitely on the other side of that, which is Muslims, Mexicans, and, you know, not so much the abortion and gay stuff, but anyway, so it was a very enlightening conversation, and I run into those a lot, it feels like. But
you're a magnet for them.
Yes.
You talk to people, I'm standoffish, and they stay the hell away.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and he was hitting on me anyway, but that's how that helps. Sure. Started. But anyway, it was interesting, and it really did make me...
Not your type, huh?
No. Not so much.
really did make me
bring the point home of how bad we are at messaging, about how horrible that we haven't reached this guy. He just doesn't know that Democrats are the party of the working people.
You know, I listened to Greg and I listened to Kagro and I listened to obviously Matto and I listened to other podcasts and I listened to other liberals, and it's starting to come into focus that we have a huge messaging problem.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And like there's nuanced infighting about it. It's because, we're not kissing working white class people's asses enough, or we're being identity politics too much. And the problem is much simpler than that.
Yes.
It is much more like, and it comes into focus when we talk to, and again, this guy, we've had conversations like these over the past few months, like hundreds of times, it seems like people are just completely ignorant to the realities of what each party stands for.
Yes.
And
completely.
And like, it frustrates me sometimes when I hear the talking heads like, well, Republicans have a message. It's like, well, yeah, it's a message. It's mostly bullshit. But on the other side, we don't even have a message.
No.
So they don't.
Right.
Like all.
We are principled.
We have been defined.
Right? We believe in what we believe in because we believe it's the right thing. And there's this arrogance to it that says, look, the polling shows everybody agrees with us. We know that we're fucking right. We know that it's the moral thing. We know that it's the ethical thing. Like, we know that we're right. And the polls show that people agree with us. So we just assume that the average person can connect those fucking dots, and they don't, and they can't, and they won't. You have to tell them. You can't just assume.
No.
They know that we believe the same thing they believe.
Look, here's the problem,
they don't
right?
know that we believe the same thing they believe. They have no idea who we are. We're these whiny, I don't know.
Coastal elites.
Coastal elites with an arrogance problem, and we're smug, and we think that God's stupid. They don't realize that, like, that's probably all true. I'll take it, but
it's irrelevant to your daily life.
Correct. I actually want you to be in that union. I want to fight for that union.
I want you to
have more unions. I want you to have healthcare. I want you to have your kid go to a really good school, regardless of your zip code. I turned my dad around on this the other day.
Yeah.
I used some Democratic, not that they have talking points, I made them up, but I was talking about education, and I was telling him about the inequality that exists in education because of the way that education is funded.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally just told him, he didn't know, because nobody fucking told him, that we don't just take this pot of money, of tax money, and split it up equally amongst kids and send them to school.
No.
We take the property tax money from a certain district, which are drawn by racist people,
yes.
and give a bunch of money to white kids and not a bunch of money to brown and low-income kids.
And their schools suck.
And their
then
schools
Betsy DeVos
suck,
comes
and
in and says,
don't.
Your school sucks because it's mismanaged, so now
right.
I'm going to privatize it.
Correct. So I'm telling my dad this, and I'm like, you know, because we were talking about racism, and he's, you know, it's impossible, but we're talking about starting from a starting point, just a starting point of children.
Mm-hmm.
Children should at least have the same access to education that is the same across the board. And he was like, nobody disagrees with that. And I was like, your entire party
yes,
disagrees with that. And he was
yes.
like, that's not possible. So I explain all of this to him. And he's like, of course I want that. Of course I want every kid to be like attached a dollar amount and go into whatever school, and every school is funded equally. He's like, it's insane that that's not the way that it works.
Well,
and I said, you should
party.
Tell your fucking party that. Like, and I, so I started to explain, and he's like, well, this is an area that I just disagree with them. I almost don't believe you, he says. I almost don't believe you that they would want to do that. And I'm like, please look it up. Please, I swear to God, look up Betsy DeVos, and don't look at fucking Fox News. Look at like actual facts, things she said, what is her plan.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what your party says about education and the way that it's funded. And you're going to disagree with them on this. And like, I explained to him a very basic Democratic position, and he agreed with me, and it's my dad.
Still trying the inception thing on your dad, huh?
I can't stop. I'm fucking
I
wired.
I know.
But I got him around on education because he didn't know. And that's the thing that's brilliant about Republicans, right?
Oh, right, right.
They tell you all the things that they want you to know, and they just don't talk about shit they don't want you to know their position on.
And they condense it to easily digestible talking points. This is what people like Karl Rove and David Bossie and Lee Atwater and Frank Luntz have all figured out that we are still spinning our wheels about.
Yes.
It's very easy, digestible talking points.
Yes. Like the West Wing, the 10 words.
Yeah.
Right?
And we don't do that coherently. We don't do that consistently.
We like nuance way too much. And we also assume everybody knows. And we don't know how to have one message.
You know, and I think Obama was pretty good at that.
He was the greatest orator.
Yeah, I think he was. But the party as a whole, not so good. And even when I see...
And even when he did it, the whole fucking point of messaging is the president's really great, right? He comes out with this amazing inspirational speech with a pretty solid message.
Mm-hmm.
The what thing that's supposed to happen after that happens is all the Democrats that are in office all over the country are supposed to have a couple of strong lines that mimic his message but don't repeat it exactly. And they're just supposed to say that over and over and over again. That's the message of the party for that week.
We're not disciplined enough to do that.
No, we're not doing that at all.
Yeah.
Even when we had Obama and he had this great ability to do it.
When he had a majority in both houses.
Nobody fucking was like, good call. Everyone loved that. I'm going to start saying that. There's no coordination. There's no...
And the Republicans have been very, very good at that. Of course, now that's...
And they're so much more disciplined.
In the age of Trump, that's breaking up somewhat, but not enough, not completely. No. I mean, they're still basically...
Even in the
Trump.
Age of Trump, they're able to kind of have a messaging calendar, which we can't even manage. And we have Trump. I mean, it's
crazy.
It's really a problem. Yeah.
And we're working on it.
Yeah, we are.
I don't know how much we could do, but we actually are going to... try to affect something with the people we know, not saying we know the highest level people, but we know some people, and we're going to goddamn well try, to fix this.
Because it seems to me, we've been talking about this a lot the last couple weeks, this is the overarching problem in our party.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's the purity problem and all of that. We've got our problems, let's be honest. But the biggest problem... is messaging.
You know,
our ability to reach the fucking public and say, oh my God, you guys are totally on our team and here's why.
And if Trump didn't teach us that, then nothing will.
That's right.
Literally nothing will.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Like if we couldn't get our message, our shit together, and yes, there were all kinds of mitigating factors. There's Comey, there's Russians, there's everything.
Yes.
But the fact of the matter is, we couldn't get our messaging together enough to beat that guy.
Yeah.
We have a problem, you guys.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when
Russia
you look
at... Russia and Comey and everything else aside.
Exactly. And for me, the biggest problem is really like... It's scientifically provable that we're shitty at this.
No, we're...
Because
we're,
look at...
We prove it
polls.
Every day.
Look at the polls and any issue, almost without exception, the American people agree with the Democratic Party's platform.
On just about everything.
On almost everything, without exception. There's a couple
and usually
of
by huge
military things.
Margins.
Yes. And we keep fucking losing.
It's
and when
maddening.
You ask average Joe on the street what he thinks a Democrat is, it's bad.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because the very second episode of this broadcast I did back when it was me and Pierre.
Yes.
I went over, go check it out if you on the podcast. I went over a laundry list of issue polls that I think Kaiser or Pew or somebody had just done.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was like 19 out of 20. It was Democrats. And I said, you know,
the public agrees with the Democratic Party's platform.
And I said, eventually this is going to sink in to the American voters and we're going to win was my point. And now I feel like a dumbass because I was wrong.
Yeah.
Because we haven't told them. We can't get the message across.
We haven't fucking just said out loud sentences. And you know why? I think the reason is we don't want to be controversial. We are still in this weird anxiety, divorced parents, the child of a divorced parent thing where it's like, maybe back in the 80s, everybody didn't agree with us on all this, so you didn't want to bring it up.
We don't want to alienate these people.
Everybody agrees with us. We have to stop with this idea that everybody disagrees and we don't want to be controversial. They fucking agree with us.
Yeah.
They agree with us
now.
We
have the high ground.
We have the high ground. We have the majority. We have the numbers. You have to start saying things like, I'm pro-choice without equivocation. That used to be controversial. It's fucking not now.
No, it's...
Contraception should be free and available to everyone.
It's
used to be
still
controversial.
It's
not
in
now.
Places we will never win.
Yeah, but who fucking cares?
They don't understand that.
I know. It's so frustrating. Everywhere is not the rural South. Most people who live in this country agree with us, and we have to start telling them that they agree with
us.
And
even after Las Vegas, we're still trying to, like, tightrope on guns, it feels like.
And the overwhelming majority of the American people agree with us on gun laws.
Mm-hmm.
We just don't want to piss off that 2% that are never going to vote for us anyway.
Yeah, we were going to inflame the NRA.
Maddening.
They need
good.
To stop
inflame
anyway.
The NRA.
Yeah.
Fucking good.
Yeah.
That gets us some points. We have to have a goddamn backbone, first of all. And then we have to have some fucking discipline and a fucking message. And if we can't do those three
over
things
and over,
over
and over
and over and over again.
Until it sticks in people's heads.
And it's going to be, it needs to be a fucking
ballsy
message.
And Republicans have a 30-year head start on that, by the way.
But yeah, they do.
Like the guy you talked to last night, he's been hearing freedom, low taxes for 30 years.
Yep.
He's almost intractable at this point.
Absolutely. And if I were to explain to him, and he believed me, all of the things we just talked about, I still don't know that he votes
No, because he would have to hear that every day.
Every day.
Not just one time at a bar with this cute chick that he was hitting on. Like, he might remember that for a week, and then he's going to turn on Fox News,
and
it's
all
going
to be
gone.
He's
going
to remember that I said something to him, but he's not going to believe it or internalize it in a way that it makes a difference in his voting patterns.
But if he heard it every single day, and somebody reached out to him consistently, then we have a chance.
Yeah. But without that, no way.
But we're not doing that.
And it, like I said, it can't just be this watered down version of research to death talking points. This needs to be punchy. It needs to be memorable.
It needs
to be succinct, direct, repeated, or we just have no chance.
Yeah.
And we can have all the best ideas and all the brightest people and the greatest plans, as we've seen. And if we fucking lose, it doesn't matter. And if you don't tell anybody what those plans are, you don't win.
Yeah. And like, we're out of time because they're going to force through gerrymandering. We got a big case that's coming up where we could already be really screwed. They're going to force through, taking away voting rights.
Yep.
So like, we're out of time. Like, it's now or never
before
we completely slide into the abyss.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
No more time.
It's so much
this.
Evidence that we're in the position that we're in and Trump is the fucking president. If we had our shit together and we were disciplined and had a message, he'd be impeached by now.
Yeah.
We have the greatest political gift that's ever been given to us. I'm not talking, I don't love him. I hate everything about this, but just from a really like boiled down to just politics, Donald Trump's could be the best thing that ever happened to the Democratic Party.
Well, it's sort of the Susan Sarandon
and we
argument.
Just aren't.
Although Susan Sarandon's not doing anything to help.
No, and I'm not. This is not what I want, but it's here, so we may as well use it and win.
And so far,
we're not. We really aren't.
Outside of a few people who were on top of it, like Maxine Waters, and
yes,
a few others. Otherwise, it's a muddled message. You still have...
Right. I mean, we have Donald Trump in the fucking presidency, and mm-hmm. we're squabbling. What the fuck are we doing?
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, there's so much more to get to, so let's pivot to the Iran deal. So Donald Trump announced that he is not going to certify the Iran deal, which makes for big headlines on the surface. In practical application, though, it doesn't necessarily mean that much unless Congress bungles this, which they might. But we don't really know. I'm not going to go back and explain the whole Iran deal again. But in a nutshell, we made a deal with Iran to make sure they never got a nuclear weapon with very specific benchmarks that we can check to make sure they're not doing that. And for the most part, it has worked thus far, which even the Pentagon and the State Department and Madison Kelly and the people around Trump concede is the truth.
Yes.
So Trump got on TV yesterday and said they violated it and they're not living up to the spirit of it and this and that. And so I'm decertifying it and it's a terrible deal and we're going to renegotiate it. The problem is none of the other parties involved, because this wasn't a bilateral U.S.-Iran deal. We had European partners and
tons,
Russians were involved.
And
they said, no, we're not renegotiating
the deal.
We're not doing
that.
The deal's
done.
And it's working.
And it's working. Shut the fuck up. We're not. Like, we just straight are not going to go back. So you can take yourself out of it, I guess, asshole. But we're still all going to do it.
Yeah, and even the loud mouths on some on the Democratic side and the Republicans, this terrible deal, I don't want it, are now saying, no, it's working, we gotta keep it going.
Yeah.
Which means you were full of shit back then. But
that's
because
you knew it
would
pass and you knew it would work and that was good.
And you had to play it to your hawkish base or whatever.
We hate Obama.
Right.
Yeah.
But anyway, like with ACA, right?
Yep.
But anyway, so I don't know what to make of it yet because Congress is such a wild card. I don't know what they're going to do. They could go along with Trump here and wreck this thing, in which we'll have a nuclear Iran probably within 5 years.
But they don't want to do that, right? I feel like what this whole... These two executive orders... Just give me one sec. Couldn't get anything done on healthcare. Executive order. Okay. Couldn't get anything done. Iran deal. Just not going to recertify it. These executive level things that he's doing, I think, are in a way to mollify the Republicans because... They can't get it done later. I don't think they really want these things. They don't actually want to have a nuclear Iran or tear apart the deal.
Right. There's a lot of people that theorize this is they're trying to placate Trump and at the same time put a little more pressure on Iran for other things that aren't specifically about the deal.
Right.
And it's kind of nuanced, but it's also dangerous because this was working.
Yes.
And this could go wrong. And then you have no deal. And then there's literally nothing to stop Iran from getting a nuclear weapon except a war with Iran.
Yes.
And who wants a war with Iran?
Or North Korea.
Besides John Bolton.
Right. Well, of course. God.
Besides John Bolton and Benjamin Netanyahu. Mm-hmm. Who wants a war with Iran?
Right.
Who?
No.
Any of you out there? My dad? Your dad? Any of them want a war with Iran?
Sometimes I wonder.
The dude we talked to last night? I don't think so.
Oh, he doesn't.
No.
So who is this benefiting if this goes wrong?
Right. That's why I think the Republican Party, not Donald Trump, because he's just a fucking lunatic. The Republican Party doesn't actually want to dismantle the Iran deal. What they want is to make it look like whatever Obama did got undone. So that they can look like they kept their promise in 2018. They can look like, see, all that horrible things the black guy did, we did away with. Now,
well, yeah, I'm sure that's what Mitch McConnell's
thinking.
They'll
take credit for all the shit that Trump did.
Yeah.
But in the end, they didn't actually pass laws or do legislation to harm things like this because they don't actually want that. They just want the political punch.
Yes, enough of them feel that way. And enough of them are principled and sensible enough, but a whole bunch more are just spineless lunatics or sycophants, and they will follow Trump off the cliff and lead us to a war.
Yes, correct.
I don't trust this Congress.
I don't either. No.
I certainly don't trust them to fix healthcare. I don't trust them to get CHIP back online. I don't trust them to do the right thing on the environment, and I certainly don't trust them to do the right thing with foreign policy.
No.
So this is why this is so dangerous, and we could very well end up in a catastrophic war. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen or likely to happen, but we are at much greater risk now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not like it's out of the realm of possibility at all.
No.
It's like, maybe.
So this is not good with Trump pulling this stunt.
No. It's terrifying.
Yeah.
To be honest.
So what else? Where else do you want to go? We got about 10 minutes before the break.
Well, let's just finish up with Trump and we can talk about other garbage men later.
How about Puerto Rico? Because Puerto Rico is still a disaster.
Yeah.
You still have a majority of the island without power. You have people drinking contaminated water. The death toll that they've been reporting, which is like
vastly underreported.
Mm-hmm. And the media is kind of taking their eye off it now. We got wildfires in California. We got the Iran deal. We got ACA. And they're kind of, okay, well, that's bad. And now we got to focus on something else. No, these are Americans.
And then Donald Trump said, the infrastructure... He didn't use... I don't know how to be as stupid as he is, so I'm just going to explain what he meant. The infrastructure in Puerto Rico was already in really bad shape before the hurricanes.
True.
Therefore, it's not really our job to fix it because it was already garbage.
Right.
And we can't just keep our federal workers down there forever.
This They're is after, have after to come back. The hurricane hit 3 weeks ago.
Yes.
3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
The federal government was in New Orleans helping with Katrina for how many years?
They're still there.
Yeah, they're still there.
They're still there. But there are still FEMA trailers.
But
like
very intensely working on it for at least...
5-6 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And after three weeks, we're like, well, you know, we can't...
Fuck them, they're brown.
We can't
and
stay
over there.
In Puerto Rico forever.
Uh-huh.
Now, he got roundly panned for that.
He did.
I don't think even any Republicans in Congress came to backed him
no,
up
No, they
that.
Didn't. And Eugene Robinson put an op-ed piece in the Washington Post, or maybe it was the Times, that abandoning Puerto Rico would be an impeachable offense.
Yeah.
And laid out a pretty good...
Kelly had to come out and be like, no, of course we're going to stay in Puerto Rico as long as it takes. Of course
and a bunch
we're not.
Of congressmen came out and said, we're... Just shut up. We're already funding it. We're going to keep funding it. Yes, they can stay there for as long as you need. It's fine. Just don't listen to him. Just
yeah, which is
it.
Great. It's exactly the way government's supposed to function.
Absolutely. Oh, our leader is a small child. Don't worry
about it. Don't pay attention to him.
Please don't pay attention to him. He's just a madman.
Yeah.
It's almost like back in the day when there were kings. The Madness of King George, isn't that the name? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and the advisors had to be like to foreign diplomats and ambassadors. Don't listen to him.
He's just there for show, and don't worry about it. He's not in charge anyway. He's insane. He's an insane person.
So that's a good comparison. That's exactly what we have. We have a mad king.
Yeah, we have a mad king, and we have the people around him going, just...
So we have to, you know, he has to wear the crown and sit on the throne, and
we have to have adoring photo shoots.
And we have to bow when he comes by, but
not
he's not the
but he's
one
not
in charge.
Charge. Yeah, don't listen
Great.
To him. There's nothing. Don't
Great,
worry
we have a...
He can make proclamations. We're not going to follow any of that.
We have an 18th century monarchy now, guys.
We do.
Congrats.
We have an 18th century mad king, so...
It's great.
Yay!
That's what you wanted, right?
Right? That was what we were...
That's the way the United States government's supposed to function, right?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
So Puerto Rico, and now we have wildfires in California that have already killed at least 30. Wine country is essentially burning. You would think more rich white people would be really, really upset by this.
Yeah, well, they are. Air quality is as bad as some of the worst parts in China.
Yep.
It's really... I have some friends who live there, and I have one in San Francisco, and even she was saying, like...
Air sucks.
Pretty far away, but it's like, yeah, it's gross.
San Francisco's not that far away.
Well,
I mean, we're talking 50 miles maybe?
No.
From Napa?
I don't know California map that well, but I think she's much farther away than that. Anyway, no, it doesn't matter.
I drove from San Francisco to Sonoma, at least, was only like an hour, hour and a half, if even that far. So, well, but anyway, the point is, I'm not ready to heap a lot of blame on Trump or Republicans yet because there's not much they can do right now.
No, I mean, fire's way different than...
Yeah, but there was... But do you have any confidence in the federal response to this? Once they get the fires under control, or to help get the fires under control?
No. I mean, our government isn't even staffed. The actual federal government isn't even really fully staffed at all. And our president came out and said, well, I'm not going to staff those positions. We don't need them. It's too much government, because he doesn't understand government at all.
Yeah.
So it's not just FEMA. There's so many federal agencies that have a role in this eventually, whether it's cleanup or schools or, I mean, there's just a million things, and we don't even have, I mean, we're not even staffing our government. So no, I have absolutely zero confidence in their ability to help anybody do anything.
And again, I need to harp on this again. Before the election and immediately after the election, what we told everybody was, we told Stein voters and the Johnson voters and our dads and whoever else, like, okay, I get it. You don't like Hillary. You think you're ready for a protest vote. Listen, in the real world, things happen. Mm-hmm. Natural disasters happen. International crises happen. Mm-hmm. Whatever you think of Hillary, if you don't have a competent leader at the helm, these disasters and these catastrophes and these issues can turn loss of life into situations into catastrophic loss of life situations, yes. And more people than necessary will die.
Yes.
And now that has happened because it's inevitable. And now more people than necessary, probably by factors of 3, 4, 5, God knows how much, are dying. And we haven't even, and we're not even engaged in a war yet. Knock on wood,
although we are much closer to one because he keeps fucking poking these people.
So again, elections have consequences, and here we are, and real people are dying because we don't have a functional executive branch, because we did not take our responsibility to elect our leaders seriously enough.
Yes.
And now real people are dying, and real people are suffering, and real people will continue to suffer and die. And at a certain point, I don't care if you want to admit it to me or apologize or do whatever you want. I really need you to think about this and start thinking about taking your responsibility seriously if you're going to be politically involved at all. If you just decided you don't want to be politically involved and let the chips fall where they may, then I guess that's up to you. But
no, I have. If you
say you care,
it's just as bad.
It is just as bad. But you know what?
Just deciding that I don't give a shit if all these people die—that's not a thing that anyone wants to admit to. But not voting is the same.
No,
voting is just saying I don't give a shit about anything.
I agree. But if you've decided you do give a shit, then there's responsibility that comes along with that.
Yeah.
And I started writing a piece about this. I've talked about it on the podcast. Voting is about more than feeling good when you pull the lever.
Right.
I honestly think 70 to 80% of Americans vote just because of the way they feel in that moment and on election night when they pull the lever and hopefully their person wins. And that is like the extent of the thought they put into it. And now...
I disagree with that. I think that... I disagree. And I think that way more people are... entrenched on one side or the other, right? I think that maybe the independents or the people who don't, you know, aren't politically active or engaged, maybe that's, they have a feel-good vote, but I think most people, and more than most people want to admit, really do fall on one side or the other. And they feel pretty strongly about that side. Like,
sure.
We are a very divided nation.
Yes.
Like, it's clearly. Not like most people just want to feel good. They have decided how they feel about things. One way or the other. And it doesn't matter who the person is, they're going to vote for their guy.
Yeah.
Because that's how they feel.
But I'm not talking about the intractable people, right? I'm talking about the other 30% that decide elections.
But like 70, 80% of people, that I don't agree with that.
Okay, maybe that's
maybe
an exaggeration.
It's 20, 30%
maybe that's
don't really care.
Maybe that's an exaggeration.
They want to feel good. Like Josh's of the world, right? Josh for sure wants to feel good when he pulls that lever. He just doesn't like Hillary. Now, he voted for Hillary because Trump is, I mean, this is a great example, right? So Josh was like, Josh personally dislikes Trump. Like, I would beat that guy up if I saw him in a bar.
Right.
I don't like him personally.
Right.
So he voted for Hillary. Right. Didn't like her either, but it was about personality, you know? Yeah.
In any event, so we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to sort of get away from Trump, although it is kind of related to Trump.
Yeah.
As there's been a flood in the news lately of sexual harassment and assault claims against powerful men, and not just Harvey Weinstein. Another name popped up that I find interesting. Two more.
Yeah.
I haven't even checked the news feed. There's probably five more this morning. Yep. But here we go with that, and we'll talk about it. So don't go anywhere. We will be right back. To Irreverent Testimony. I know we didn't cover everything in the week having to do with the federal government and Donald Trump and everything else.
No.
But some other really important news has been percolating and coming to fruition the last week or two. And I'm kind of going to turn this segment over to Rachel because it's her perspective that I think is most important to talking about this stuff.
Well, I don't even know that mine is important in terms of all of this.
Between the two of us.
Yes.
How's that?
But, okay. So, unless you've been, like, living in a cave, you know that Harvey Weinstein, the producer and sort of kingmaker in Hollywood, founded Miramax, and then later with his brother, what is it? Weinstein Company, I want to say.
Weinstein Incorporated, something like that.
Anyway, they make a lot of real. They have made a lot of really amazing movies, won a lot of Oscars, and it came out this week that he is a disgusting, horrifyingly awful sexual predator, which is a apparently pretty well known thing in Hollywood.
Oh yeah,
everybody knew, and
everybody.
Yeah. So a bunch of famous women came out and said this is what happened. I think it'll be followed by an avalanche more.
Yeah. We're up to like 33 last I checked.
I think so. Yeah, I think it was 32 when I was looking at Vanity Fair yesterday. They're keeping a running list. And, you know, there's a lot to unpack.
Yeah, the stories are horrifying.
They are. Absolutely.
Like, even the most mild of the stories are horrifying.
Yes. Yeah. Literally being chased around a room and...
Cornered.
Suddenly he goes and takes a bath while you're in a hotel room with him.
And those are just, like, the sort of run-of-the-mill ones because there's full-on sexual assault,
correct.
Too.
Yeah. Yes. So... There's been a lot of analysis of this because this happened earlier this week. So there's been a lot of, you know, unpacking of all of this by the media. And there's a couple of interesting perspectives, I think, or the complicity of the people around him is something that has been talked about that I think is important to talk about. But the thing that I want to get to first, I think, is this idea that he was a very powerful man, right?
Mm-hmm.
And not just because he had a lot of money, but he had a lot
influence.
Of money and he had a lot of influence and a lot of people depended on him and he made a lot of people in, like Quentin Tarantino and Kevin Smith. I mean, he made major, huge people's careers.
Yes.
And he also had a lot of influence in the media. And while the details of his sexual assaults and sexual harassment of people are horrifying, something that I don't think has been talked about enough or digested enough was what he did to people who either rebuked his advances, got away from him, mm-hmm. or deigned to say something about it.
Yes, yes. Very
and the,
important.
You know, having known and talked to survivors of sexual assault, that in and of itself is a life-altering thing to have happen to someone. But then for this man who does these things to women, for him to then further ruin their lives by trashing them in the media, making sure they get blackballed and they don't get jobs, really to economically and socially affect them for years and years to come out of a sense of vindictiveness or retribution is, I don't know if it's worse, but it is truly horrifying and vile. And you know, that's something that I just don't think people are talking about enough.
No, yeah, that's... I mean, some of the better articles are, but you're absolutely right. You get trapped in this situation where you are going to submit to this or I can literally ruin your career. And in some cases, it appears he did or
he
tried
did.
To.
He did, absolutely. Yeah, Rosanna Arquette alleges that that's exactly what he did.
She got blackballed.
Yeah, that originally her role in Pulp Fiction was supposed to be much larger, and she was also supposed to have some kind of a profit sharing from it.
Yeah.
I mean, this is Rosanna Arquette in 1992 or 3 was giant.
she had just done, was it True Romance or was that before True Romance?
Oh, that's Patricia Arquette. Patricia this is Arquette. Rosanna Arquette.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, but she was, I mean, she was an up and coming star in the 90s. Not so much now. And in part, I think that's because of what she says happened, which is, this is just an example, like a gross story of what he did. But then also like, her role in Pulp Fiction got minimized tremendously and she didn't really work much after that. But so she gets told to go to meet with Harvey. She's known him for a while. He's helped her out. He's got two different scripts he wants her to look at. She gets to his room, knocks on his door. He comes to the door.
Yeah, these
bathroom.
Are all in his hotel room, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, these are in hotel rooms or hotel bars or his house. So she goes up to his room, knocks on the door. He answers the door in a bathrobe, which is not closed. And tells her, and she's still standing at the door from what I understand, tells her that he has a really sore neck. And she says, well, I can recommend a great masseuse. He grabs her hand and he sticks it on his neck. Ugh. And she pulls her hand away and then he grabs her hand and sticks it on his dick, which is exposed. And she said, that is not going to happen.
Okay, that is sexual assault right
yes,
there, by
correct.
The way. In case you're wondering, 100%. Like, oh, that's gross. No, now we are in the...
That is sexual
realm
assault.
Of sexual assault.
Correct. He just sexually assaulted her.
Yes.
She says, that is never going to happen. And he gets pissed. And he's like, starts telling her about all of these famous actresses that have fucked him and how much he's helped their career. And she says, I'm never going to be that girl.
Right.
And walks away.
Right.
Okay. So that is a case of sexual assault and also super horrifyingly gross. One of the more minor things that he did.
Yeah, right.
But
in scope. Yeah.
In terms of some of the other stories that are out there. But then after that, he totally fucked her career.
Seems like it, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he reduced her role in one of the most famous films of all time. I don't know a lot, especially in the coming years after that, that she did. Yeah, and she makes it pretty clear that he said to her, like, I'm going to ruin your career. And he did. And he did. She's a great actress.
So then word gets around town, and then you're the next up-and-coming 20-something that gets invited to his room. Now what do you do?
Right.
Do you risk your career to say no to...
Well, and even more particularly gross, because he knew he had this reputation, he knew it was kind of a, you know, everyone knew.
Yeah.
He'd have what they called the honeypot. So he would always have... and make it really clear, like, a woman would bring you to the room with Harvey and be there. So you're like, oh, okay, I'm safe. Like, I know his reputation, but there's this woman casting director or his
and
assistant's
she's
going
be
to be there. Or
with
his
me.
Other producer, this woman is going to be in the room with me.
Right.
So women got lulled in this false sense of security. I mean, that's the level of nefariousness that we're talking about. He was a rapist. He knew everybody knew. So to get women to come to see him, he would use other women to make them feel safe.
Yep.
That's... So on a level that I don't even know. And then anyway, then the women would go in the room and he would dismiss his assistant or say, I don't need you right now. And then they would be alone in the room.
And then it was always almost, hey, can you give me a massage?
Yes. I need a massage. I'd like a massage, or I'll give you a massage, or my usually, feet really hurt. Usually you him. Give me one, yeah. And then horrifying things happen after that.
Well, that's horrifying enough.
Yeah. So, but that level of like, everyone knows I'm a rapist, so if I want to stay rapey, how do I do it? Oh, yeah. I'll use other
How do I trick them into getting in a room?
How do I trick them into getting in a room?
And then
with
they're
me?
Trapped, because then they that's know... Right. What happened to Rosanna Arquette or whoever else, if they say no, I could fuck their careers.
Yeah.
That is a level of evil that is sort of, it's hard to comprehend.
It is. Yes. And that's where we get into the notion of the complicity. All these people around him, his assistants, other studio executives, other producers, people who worked in his circle knew. They had to know.
And just to jump in and aside, you're probably wondering if I'm going to get into the whole politicizing this and somehow blaming Hillary Clinton and that he was a Democratic donor. You know what? I'm not going to bother because it's not important.
No. And it's not a thing.
No, that's not what we're focused on here.
No.
Don't care. And I, you know what? Let me go out on a limb and say if Hollywood elites, very powerful people in Democratic circles, powerful people in Republican circles, powerful people in science, technology, any field, this is rampant across every sector and political stripe and field you could imagine.
That's right.
And we don't fucking care at this point.
It happens everywhere. So this is the other part, right? We have all this noise, but we were having this conversation yesterday about, well, I read this article that was arguing that men are starting to, that, well, it was just a garbage article, and it made this crazy argument that these women that come forward about these powerful men are hurting feminism because it's making men afraid to mentor women in the workplace.
I didn't see that one. That wasn't the one I sent you, was
it? No.
That's crazy.
Yes. So when women come forward about these things, it's making men nervous.
Was that in the New York Times?
Yes.
Of course it was.
And it's making men nervous. Was it the Times? I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that.
Wouldn't surprise me, though.
But it's making men jumpy and nervous. They don't know if they're allowed to be in the room with women anymore. So they're not mentoring women, or they're not going to mentor women, and it's going to hurt women in the career field.
So they're regurgitating the 90s arguments about when sexual harassment sort of blew up because it became law?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Yes. So women are hurting themselves by coming forward. We should all just shut the fuck up and let men assault us at work, and then we'll have good careers. So Samantha Bee did this piece about, I think brilliant. In reaction to this, of just like, you know, FAQs for not raping people in the workplace. And it really, I mean, it's brilliant. You should
Sounds
all go
like
find
an
it.
Amy Schumer thing too.
Yeah. But the point is that's an absurd thing to say. That goes back to making this assumption that we often do about rape and about, this assumption about men, that like men
can't control
themselves. Are these animalistic, sex machines that just can't control themselves. And if you put them alone in a room with a woman, God knows what could happen.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
come
the Mike
on,
Pence
you should
argument,
know that,
right?
Like, right? Yeah.
Like, I can't have dinner with a woman. I might rape her. You know, like, wait, what?
I'm only a man.
I'm only a man. If I'm alone in a room with a woman, God knows what would happen. I might have to rape her. Like, that's not the men that I know. That's not the world I live in. And for people to talk about men in this way and to talk about, I mean, it's a way of victim blaming, of course, but it's also this way of like, how do you feel about that as a man? Like, is that not just like, hold on, wait. I'm definitely capable of being alone in a room with a woman and not raping her. I'm fully capable of that.
It happens literally every day at my job.
Yes, exactly.
I work with a lot of women.
Yeah, and in your home and in bars, there's lots of places where you are with women and you're not compelled to rape them.
Yeah. I've never been compelled to rape anybody.
No. And you find it morally horrifying and disgusting and a thing that you would never want to do ever, much less be compelled to do it.
So what is your question exactly?
So how do you feel about the way that men are being characterized? It's a way of excusing their behavior, but it must, if people characterize women that way, like, I would be pissed.
You know what? It has been sort of pounded into my head for so long, for so many years, my whole existence, that I don't know if pissed is the word. I really don't know how to describe. I feel basically the same way you do. I think
like
it's so
being made, the assumption well, being
on,
made about
on.
You,
it's so preposterous really that it's hard for me to sort of put an emotional tag on it.
Yeah.
Because it's so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I get like a different approach. Like when Pence says, like, I can't dine alone with another woman, like, to me, it's so laughable and ridiculous. It's almost hard for me to get angry about it in the way you do.
Yeah.
Because I'm trying to put myself in a position of Mike Pence and thinking about how ridiculous that is.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's sexist on both counts, right?
Yeah. It is when you put it that way.
Yeah. It's saying that it's, again, it's a way of excusing men's behavior and it's a way of victim blaming, but it's also just not accurate. Normal men that I know that you'd be incapable of, or that you'd be capable of it, much less incapable
of not doing
it. Well,
not even going as far as rape, but like saying something inappropriately or leering inappropriately or making inappropriate jokes or
being sexually suggestive in a situation where it's totally unfounded.
Like somehow that's assumed or expected.
Yeah.
Or necessary. Like, again, it's hard for me to honestly say I'm offended by it, and just that I find it so ridiculous and preposterous. Yeah. Especially the fact that I walk into rooms with women alone every day, again, as part of my job, and none of them have any expectation that things are going to be uncomfortable or inappropriate.
Right. Right. And this is the other part that I want to get to, which we were talking about yesterday also, which is we talk about rape culture.
Mm-hmm.
But we also talk about, you know, company culture, right? Company culture and culture at large, like, depends on you create it. And in Hollywood, it seems that it is really gross and really rapey and very, like, reciprocal, right? Even if you're not Harvey Weinstein and you have to, like, you know, you're going to forcibly have sex with somebody, I'm sure that the culture of Hollywood, as we've heard, is pretty coercive and reciprocal and pretty gross.
Yes, absolutely.
And I guess what I'm trying to get to is the place that you work and the place that I work have fostered an environment where that would
that
be
is not acceptable.
Totally, entirely, intolerably unacceptable.
No, you'd be out on your ass that day, probably.
Yeah, there's just absolutely no tolerance for it.
Right.
And there is none of this, like, oh, you know him, but it's fine. That's just not a thing that happens.
No.
At all. No. And I, you know, I work for a law firm. And there are lots of stories about a lot of abuses of powers, particularly, I think, in, like, the 80s and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was having this conversation with a lady at work. We were watching the news in the break room, and they were talking about the Weinstein thing. And it was astonishing having this conversation with this older lady, and she was telling me, she was sort of excusing his behavior.
Sure.
And she's in her 50s or early 60s, and she was telling me about how when she worked, she's worked in law firms for 35 years, and when she worked in law firms in the 80s, this kind of stuff happened all the time. And she sort of said it like, I mean, you know, back then that's just how
it
was.
Just, which was his excuse at first,
there's
right?
There's grab ass, and then, yeah, you know, sometimes people get drunk at the holiday party and somebody gets a little handsy, but that's just the way it was back then. People just didn't get so upset about it.
Well, and I just want to remind people that before Weinstein disappeared, maybe literally, that was his first excuse.
Yes.
When this all came to light
a
week ago.
Grew up in a different time.
He grew up in a different time.
Yes.
And so that's really...
We're talking the 90s, so fuck off. A different time. We're not talking about the Mad 40s men. Or something, right? We're not in the 40s or 50s. It's the 90s.
Which is still not acceptable back then, by the way.
No, of course not. But that's not the time he was referring to. But anyway, yeah, there was this... So she was sort of just saying, like, oh, it's just the way it was. And, you know, people just didn't get so upset about it like they do now. It's just part of the job. It's part of working at a law firm. And I was thinking about that, and I was talking to you, and we were just saying, like, you know, the complicity and the sort of the culture of Hollywood can't be ignored, because this kind of thing doesn't happen where I work.
Right.
It doesn't happen where you work.
Right.
It
doesn't
requires,
happen where most people work.
No, it requires a level of everybody's in, you know?
Yeah.
Requires that sort of, the buy-in of the people around you. Because imagine if one or two of the people around him were like, oh my God, he rapes people in there, and just refused to invite women over or warned them or stayed in the room or wouldn't leave. Or, I mean, there had to be a lot of buy-in for him to do this for this many years, and a lot of people around him that allowed it to happen and helped it to happen.
Absolutely.
And that's pretty scary.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not just sort of passively complicit, like you said. These producers, sometimes female, would bring these women, create these situations.
Yep.
And I was very struck in the Vanity Fair piece where they documented like these 32 or 33 women or however many it was. Yeah. Maybe it was 28. I don't remember.
It was 32 yesterday afternoon.
Okay. And like one of them said, like apologized to one of them and said, "Oh, he does this all the time, but I'm really sorry he did it to you. You don't deserve this." I'm like, so the others did? I don't know.
Struck
me as being a weird thing to say.
Well, and there's a lot of this floating around in the not our bubble of that if they didn't deserve it, they knew. So there was an implicit consent in going to the hotel.
They don't quote deserve it, but they knew what they were getting into.
It was kind of consensual. Right. Yeah. You knew you were going to his room and you know he has this reputation and you went anyway. And then you told him no, but you didn't really fight that hard. This thing that's going on that's like, I mean, this woman at work literally said to me, "Yeah, but he made their careers." I mean, that's a trade-off. And I'm like, stop.
No, it's
fucking
not a trade-off
full
for
stop.
Anything.
What are you saying? There's this kind of like lack of empathy because it's like, yeah, but they're stars now. And well, they kind of knew. And if it was that well known and they went to the hotel room and it's like, no.
Keep in mind, we're talking about women in some cases who were 17, 18 years old.
Right. Or in their early 20s and from Iowa and they just got to Hollywood and they want to be an actress. And this literal kingmaker who made Quentin Tarantino's goddamn career says, "Come meet me and look at a script." What do? You fucking go. And you know, it's so maddening that we say these women should have not done that. They should have not gone because they should have known better. And if they hadn't gone, and it's like, we don't expect that of like, men don't deal with this. There's not a situation in which a male actor says to him, "Hey, this kingmaker wants to come see you and show you a couple of strips. Go meet him in his hotel room." That guy knows going in everything's going to be fine, and he knows coming out everything's going to be fine, and he gets the role or he doesn't.
Most likely,
there
yes.
is not, I mean, except in cases, of course, men do get raped and sexually assaulted, but not like at levels that women do.
No.
You would never say to a man if he got mugged on his way there, "Well, you know, you shouldn't walk on the street," you know?
Yeah.
It's just not an expectation that men have that going into a fucking business meeting, you might get raped. But we're supposed to tell women, "Well, don't go if you might get raped." What the fuck? I'm going to a business meeting.
Yeah.
I'm literally going to work right now. There should be no expectation that I get fucking raped while I'm there. I mean, it's maddening.
It's beyond maddening. I mean, it's literally criminal.
Yes. Yes. But the excuses floating around to me are just maddening.
Yeah.
They should have known. Maybe they knew. It's beyond victim blaming. It's like, you literally, to be a woman in the world and want to have a career. Yeah. To want to have a career. Why are you bitching about being raped? You have a fucking career. So what's your problem?
And we need to continually call out all the people who say that.
Yes.
Whether they're constantly, famous or not.
Constantly. I have to say one of my heroes this week is Anthony Bourdain. The silence of men in Hollywood's been pretty deafening.
Oh yeah.
And I think a lot of that probably they've got a lot of guilt because I think a lot of them fucking knew. And
I think Clooney said something and one or two other people said something.
Affleck was like, "Oh, I didn't know."
Well, Affleck
awful.
Has his own problems now because that video surfaced of him groping a woman on MTV Live.
I have not watched it. I have heard of it. I'll watch it later. But there haven't been a lot of, you know, where's all our woke feminist actors who want to come and talk shit about Harvey Weinstein, the rapist? I don't see any of them. I'm not hearing from any of them.
A bunch of them had their careers made by him too.
That's right. That's right. And
they didn't get raped, so they don't feel the same.
Yeah. I don't understand that. Do you?
Unfortunately, I kind of do. Because like I just said, they don't have a personal connection. Oh, I met Harvey. He was always good to me. He got me this role. God, this sounds really bad, but I mean, personally,
I worked with this woman for 6 months on this film. Oh, I just found out he raped her.
Yeah.
That wouldn't bother you?
Oh, it would bother me. I'm saying where these guys are coming from.
How do you know someone personally and like become friends with them? And then you find out that your mentor and the person that made your career raped them.
How
does that not make you hate that guy?
It's a lack of empathy.
Yeah. That empathy gap.
And I owe him. I can't trash him.
Couldn't have possibly.
Look what he's done for my career. He didn't rape me. You know, maybe they did know. So gross. Maybe they did know what they were getting into when they went into that room. God, like, I'm just speculating, okay?
Yeah.
I'm just speculating. And then there's also some rumors that Matt Damon maybe knew and helped him cover up some stuff. Yep. I don't know. Yep. I don't know the details on that, so I don't want to get too into that.
Yep.
But
he helped bury a story years ago.
Right. That, and there's still a lot of that coming up. There's still Ronan Farrow had this big story at NBC buried it, and the New York PD had him on wire that he admitted to sexually assaulting a woman, and they didn't do anything about it. Yep. That was a few years ago.
They sent the woman back. Can I just say how fucking heroic and brave these women are, by the way?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about fucking heroic, the bravest people on earth to take on this man.
Oh, yeah.
This woman got sexually assaulted by Harvey Weinstein, and then he called her the next day to invite her to a play, literally. And she said, I am busy. But she went to the cops after he assaulted her.
Yeah.
And he didn't rape her. He just, like, groped her breasts and, like, pulled his dick out and, I think, masturbated in front of her.
That's enough.
Good God.
More than enough.
She went to the cops, and they were like, holy shit.
That's a sexual
that's
assault.
That's awful. Yeah, let's that's sexual assault. And then she told him, he invited me to this play tonight, and they said, and she said, I said no. And they said, well, text him back and say yes. And so she's like, they're like, we want you to wear a wire. So this woman not only went to the cops about the most powerful man in Hollywood and reported her sexual assault, she then went back to meet with him with a wire on.
And got him to admit
on tape that he sexually assaulted her the night before.
Yes.
Got him to admit it on tape.
I said, sorry, I won't do it again. Come on. And still trying
to
get her
there. Don't ruin everything for 5 minutes of your life. Yeah.
And
she took that to the cops, and the DA nolle prosequi, which means decided not to prosecute him.
Sure, and we're finding all stuff about the New York DA. But anyway, but you know what happened, right?
LA, but yeah, anyway.
It came to the DA's, no, it was New York.
Right?
It was New York.
Okay, I thought so.
And it got to the DA's desk, and the DA's like, do you know who this is?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who this guy knows? No way.
Then they started digging up shit about her past.
Of course.
And said, well, she's not a reliable witness. She texted him following the event. And this is the thing that I was reading before we on the break about some of these women who continue to have a professional and personal relationship with him after this.
Yes.
And the complexities of that and how that should not be used to infer that what they're saying didn't actually happen and complicate it. It's not always black and white.
No, it isn't.
The rapist isn't always the guy who jumps out of the fucking bushes and gets you and then leaves.
It's
often people you know. It's often people you trust. It's often confusing and
that would be like if you're a hostage and you suffer Stockholm syndrome at a certain point, that then you're not really a hostage.
Then you're not really a hostage. You didn't actually get kidnapped.
It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but it is very much a narrative that's going around, particularly with Asia Argento.
Yes.
And it's complicated, but we have to remember that
she tried to normalize her life
at that point, I believe.
Instead of making it a trauma.
And then had consensual sex with him on multiple occasions and maintained a personal relationship with him because it was exactly that. Her attempt to make herself believe that that didn't happen.
You know what? Also, in my mind, none of the sex afterward was consensual.
Agreed. Yes.
By the definition of the law, it might have been, but like in real life.
Not in our world.
In the world, no.
Not in our world.
Once the first rape happened, it was all rape.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. We're all about enthusiastic consent over here.
Mm-hmm.
Not, oh God.
Because essentially she had became a hostage or a.
Yes. He traded her rape for her for doing things for her, and she allowed him, and she was a single mom, and I mean it's complicated, but we can't let that. That doesn't mean he's not a rapist. It doesn't mean he didn't rape her. And to your point, I think he raped her every time after that. I do,
mm-hmm.
And we
absolutely that's what
and
I
we
feel.
Don't bury her and blame her for any of that or not believe her.
Right,
believe women. Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's not just Harvey Weinstein.
Oh, do we want to talk about Steven Seagal?
We do. Steven Seagal.
Now, this is just kind of, it's just kind of like a back page. Oh, by the way, Steven Seagal, who is Vladimir Putin's best friend, big Republican donor, shows up on Fox News.
Yep.
But that's kind of besides the point.
Star from the 90s.
Movie star.
I will humbly admit I fucking loved his movies when I was a kid because I was a weird child and I liked action movies the very most. I still do. Well, I like other movies too, but when I was a kid, it was all about like
Bruce Willis and Steven Seagal and like, I loved action. I just Skull fucking loved sucked. Action movies. Particularly Hard to Kill. That was my favorite. Where he goes into a coma and Kelly LeBrock is his nurse and he comes out of the coma and whatever. Anyway.
Oh, I thought that was the one where he was on the ship and he was the cook.
No, that's Under Siege.
Oh, whatever.
And Under Siege 2, he's on a bus. Speed had just come out.
Oh, Hollywood, you're so original.
Anyway, he's a horrible rapist as well, but there's a law enforcement angle to it.
Yeah, he's Arpaio's buddy.
Yes, so...
Oh, man.
He's like an honorary cop.
The Steven Seagal. The wicked web we weave.
And A&E did this show about him where he was like a... I don't know what you call it. They have a name for it, like a sheriff deputy, but sort of like the Army Reserves where he only works like a couple like weekends
citizen,
a month or
citizen
something.
Citizen deputy, something like that.
Well, that's what Arpaio made him after he had to resign from this. So first he's like a reserves for the Louisiana.
Auxiliary, I think that's what they call it. Auxiliary police.
Yeah.
Something like
but
that.
But before this, he was an actual like sheriff's deputy for the New Orleans Police Department. Or not New Orleans, but the rural area outside of that in Louisiana. And
yeah.
A&E decided to film a show about it, and he put a Craigslist ad essentially for an assistant.
Oh God!
And a 23-year-old girl agreed to be his assistant. Within a couple of like days, she was flying on a private jet to Louisiana.
Oh God! Yeah,
where he took her to a cabin and held her against her will and raped her for 5 days.
Yeah,
she eventually escaped from that. And was running through the woods. He was running after her with a gun pointed at her with a flashlight so that he could see her. She eventually fled to safety and did not go to law enforcement. And why did she not go to law enforcement, Trav?
Because they wouldn't have believed her.
He was law enforcement.
He was law enforcement. He was
embedded. He was the law enforcement for that area of Louisiana.
Yeah.
So she calls his best friend cop buddy and is like, your buddy's raped me for the past 5 days. And he's like, oh, you're the new one probably. Like, who knows?
Yeah.
So she just gets on a fucking plane and goes back to L.A.
It's straight out of a horror movie.
And yeah, it is. It is. So she went to the cops in L.A., not in rural Louisiana.
And they said, we don't have jurisdiction.
Right. And then they told the cops where she was from and all the things. And he, rather than going through an internal affairs investigation with the law enforcement office that he worked with, he resigned as sheriff's deputy and left Louisiana.
Brave.
So then he's pretty disgraced at this point. So who of all who decides to make him a guy?
Joe Arpaio. Maricopa County, Arizona.
The now
Trump's
pardoned.
Best buddy.
Yep. Decided to, and this is where he made him the auxiliary civilian police squad.
Citizens on patrol, police
squad. Citizens on patrol, yes. And they basically, their job was to go around and harass immigrants in Arizona.
Yeah, yeah.
And A&E filmed that too, because A&E is obviously a stellar organization. but then a lot of people came out and said that he's another Weinstein.
Yep,
come to my house, and he answers the door in a fucking bathrobe, and he says,
"Here's my dick. Do something with it."
You may have to be nude in one of the scenes, so why don't you get naked with me so we can see if we're comfortable with each other?
Wow.
What are you saying? Like, are we in a 70s porn in your head? Come on.
Yeah, we literally are.
Yeah. He's crafting 70s porns in his house. It's awful. Yeah, so he did a bunch of that. Of course, he didn't have nearly as much power or influence as Harvey Weinstein, but...
No.
But a lot of women have come forward and said that they had similar experiences with him. Yeah. And then the other one this week that dropped. And I do think this is just the beginning of an avalanche in Hollywood.
Hope so, yeah.
I really do. I think that it's just going to come tumbling down.
Yeah.
To the older lady at work who was defending Weinstein's point. You know, those casting couch tropes are tropes for a reason. So I think there's a lot more. I think there's a lot more men in Hollywood that are going to get exposed for this kind of behavior.
Not just Hollywood. I just read a thing about a scientist in Antarctica who has been sexually
Yeah.
He's been sexually harassing the scientists, the female scientists that work there.
Right. Right. Or how about the lady journalist?
Antarctica.
Literally just at work as a journalist, gets on a submarine.
Oh yeah. The submarine. Ugh.
And gets murdered. Dismembered, decapitated, probably posthumously raped, and then thrown into the water.
Wow.
Because she went to cover a story for work.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
being a lady is really awesome.
It's not just Hollywood, but now they're really, you know, they're Hollywood is Hollywood. So people are very, the media smells blood in the water. So there's going to be a lot more about Hollywood, to which I say good. People try to create this nexus that, well, liberals love Hollywood. It's a symbiotic thing. It's like there happen to be a lot of people in Hollywood that espouse liberal views. And if they make a good speech or donate, great. Obviously we don't want the Weinstein money anymore. But, like, I don't give a fuck about Hollywood. And, in fact, Hollywood really turned me the fuck off with the whole Roman Polanski thing.
Yes.
If you want to talk about that a little bit, just to remind people if they don't know. Or I can sort
of... Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Roman that's Polanski. What Harvey's doing now. He's going to go join Roman in the fucking... Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, till the Statue of Limitations is up and then come back. I don't think he'll get away with it. Roman Polanski is a filmmaker.
Rosemary's Baby, he directed.
Knife in the Water, a lot of famous stuff.
In the 70s.
And some shitty stuff recently. But anyway, he essentially pulled sort of a Weinstein with a 13-year-old girl.
Yes.
Did a photo shoot with her and then got her high and or drunk and raped her, essentially.
Yes. Raped her. For sure.
Yeah.
Raped her.
Yeah. And
he was in his, what, 40s?
Yeah. Early 30s or 40s or this was in the 70s.
Yeah.
Or early
80s. She was 13.
She was literally 13, not just like figuratively like 13 years old. She told, I don't know, her parents or the cops, but he was indicted or charged or the cops wanted to talk to him.
Yep.
And he fled. He fled the country.
Yep. He went to what, Italy?
I think it was Italy.
I think it was too. I don't remember exactly, but he...
And he literally stayed there
and didn't come back to the States.
Until the Statute of Limitations ran out.
So until the Statute of Limitations for raping a 13-year-old ran out, he stayed out of the country.
He came back. The Oscars either invited him personally or did like a retrospective of his work.
They did.
And what year was this? 2006, 2007?
Yeah, around there. Yeah.
Maybe later.
Yeah, they did like one of those... Look at the body of work of this amazing person. Yes.
And gave him like a big 10-minute standing ovation. I've never watched the Oscars again since. First of all, the Oscars suck and they're boring and it's a self dick sucking festival.
Well, I never agree with them either, ever.
Well, it's besides the point. And secondly, I kind of said, you know what? Yeah, fuck you, Hollywood.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got some good liberal people there, whatever. There's not this nexus and connection. Hollywood to me is not part of the progressive movement.
No.
They're their own money making thing.
Right.
It's what they are.
And while I super appreciate people in Hollywood who stand up for liberal causes and raise a bunch of money for liberal causes, I do appreciate that.
Not really including Sean Penn because he's a gross rapist too.
Yes. And a domestic violence, wife beating. Yeah. Horrifying. The details Madonna released kind of recently.
Yeah.
I appreciate anyone who does that. And if you have a platform to do it and you can reach more people than I can, then
great.
I appreciate it. That doesn't mean that you get to be a rapist and do that and I still at all.
No.
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 So
you know what? I can agree with your dad and some other people. Fuck Hollywood. Fuck them.
Yeah, I don't care. Yeah. Especially,
most of the movies are shit anyway.
Especially given what's come out about, like I said, the complicity and the buy-in of the people that are there.
Yes.
I won't go down this road of hypocrisy, right? Like, okay. It's not like Harvey Weinstein made a movie talking about how bad rape is and then raised a bunch of money for, you know, Rain and then turned out he was a rapist. That would be hypocrisy.
Yes. It would be ironic if nothing else.
Right. But I will say one thing that I think is different between the Democrats and the Republicans. Everybody has garbage people, like you were saying.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Scientists.
Yeah.
Fucking people who own submarines, journalists,
whatever
Hollywood,
your political persuasion is.
Lawyers, everywhere, everywhere there are garbage people.
Yes.
Where there are men that have a lot of power, there tend to
there's going
abuse
to be
it
rape.
Tremendously.
Which
so
is gross.
There is, it is, and it's horrifying. But so there, we're not. There's no safe space, right?
Right.
However, when someone who donates a whole bunch of money to the Democratic Party is revealed to be a rapist, the Democratic Party says, thanks but no thanks, I don't want your money anymore, I'm going to donate to charity, and you're ostracized.
Yes.
The Republican Party nominated and then elected him president.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't think that we can draw an equivalence here. Yes, Harvey Weinstein donated to Obama. Yes, he donated to Hillary. Yes, he's a lefty guy. Yes, he donated to a shitload of progressive campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
And when we found out he was a rapist, we gave all the money back and said, fuck you.
Andrew Cuomo didn't, but he's kind of a kind of a garbage person.
So not everybody, but the part, no one, what, no, first of all, no one's electing him president. Second of all, no one's defending him. Yeah, I don't see a single person on the left saying, well, nobody, he wasn't so bad after all.
Nobody pulled a Sean Hannity and went on TV and said,
boys will be boys, different time.
Boys will be boys, or these are lies. These women are all liars, like with Roger Ailes and Bill O'Reilly.
No.
And Eric Bowling.
Not a single person on the left is saying any of that.
No.
It's all, oh my God, this is horrifying. It's a disgrace. Give the money back. Fuck him. He's gone forever. Done.
Yeah.
There is no defense of this man on our side. So there
is a difference.
Not that I've heard. If we're wrong, send me a fucking article, please.
Yeah, let us know.
Please. So there is a difference.
Yeah.
There is.
Absolutely.
And you can't make false equivalences and say, well,
but they
you
are
know,
anyway, because it's a good story.
You have we have O'Reilly and you've got Weinstein. No, you still have O'Reilly. You still love this man.
Still interview him.
Right. He's still your golden boy. You just had to, you know, kind of get rid of him for a while because it was getting steamy. We were like, go fuck yourself. Live on an island away from women forever.
Yeah.
Never come back.
But, you know, it's more clicks to get to yell both sides.
Yeah.
So both sides.
God.
As if Harvey Weinstein, besides the money he donated, had some sort of influence as Roger Ailes or Bill O'Reilly.
Like, oh, I don't know, running a news network? Yeah.
Yeah, please.
Yeah.
Fucking please.
Yeah. He had a lot of power and influence in Hollywood, but it's not like he was telling half of the American population what to believe about the news.
No.
Anyway, they're all fucking horrible garbage people, and they should go live on an island alone
together.
Without women.
Yeah.
Yeah, they can rape each other. Not even for that. Don't rape anybody. Not even rapists. Just don't rape.
Don't rape. Is that so hard?
I don't know.
Coach,
I don't think
you mean
so.
We can't rape at all?
Exactly. What if she's hot? What if she's drunk? What if she doesn't know? No.
Point. No rape.
No. No raping.
But coach, what if it's like the third date and she hadn't even put out yet? No.
What?
We're reenacting the Amy Schumer sketch.
It's so good. The Friday Night Lights.
Friday Night Lights.
Yeah. It was amazing. Yeah. And don't sexually harass people. Dude, okay. When I go to work, I just want to be at work. And it's already bad enough that I'm at work. You know what I mean? Don't kick a dog while it's down. I'm at fucking work already. Please don't sexually harass me. It's gross. It's awful. I've recounted my tale on the podcast before of how I was sexually harassed when I was 18.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, going to work already sucks. Going to work when you're pretty sure your boss is going to do something super gross really sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Is the worst.
So that's the thing. People talk about, wow, this has happened to so many women. I actually challenge you to find a woman this hasn't happened to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because rarely have I ever... I don't know. I've never met a woman where this hasn't happened.
No.
At
not on some
point.
Scale. Not on some scale. Yeah.
Some sort
mine,
of harassment.
Mine was pretty extreme. Not Harvey Weinstein extreme, but for most of the women I know,
close.
It was, you know, like making me watch porn at work and shit's pretty fucking gross.
Yeah.
And
asking you to come in alone. I mean, he wanted to get to that point.
Oh, yeah. We were very much escalating to that point.
Yeah.
And I finally shut it down. But, you know, I had another situation when I was older. Not much. I was like 22 instead of 18, where my boss was just really inappropriate with me and really just gross. Consistently talked about sex at work. And like, we were friends, but like we were only friends because we worked together so much, you know? And I don't know. It was like sexual harassment light, you know, like as I'm older, I'm like that you should not have said any of those things to me. But in the moment it was like, well, I don't know. That's just who he is, or he's that guy or whatever. And then one time Dana was out of town and we went to a happy hour thing and he tried to kiss me in his car. And I was like, all right, well, there
that's
it is.
There it is.
I wasn't in my head at all.
It happens to you. So you get kissed on planes when I'm right next to you and bosses. Everybody just wants to kiss Rachel. Very kissable.
Oh.
But gross men that don't know
please,
her.
Strangers
please strangers
and gross
stop.
Men that don't, I don't. If I want to kiss you, you'll know.
Yeah. Anyway, on that note, we're going to have so much more to say about this in the coming weeks.
Yes.
Because you're going to bet a bunch more names. It's going to be a whole thing, I'm sure.
Yep.
Anyway, we're out of time. At Irreverent Duo on Twitter, irreverenttestimony@gmail.com. We still have a Patreon, patreon.com/irreverenttestimony if you want to send us your money. That's it.
Yeah. Stay active. Stay tuned.
And stay involved. Thank you so much. See you next week. Bye.